For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, welcome to the party, pals. This is Shift and Steer, and everybody's here, even the Toad Monster, or whatever it is Aaron's holding up.
It's a Frankenstein Ninja Turtle.
Ninja Turtle. Okay. And we got some great stuff to talk about today, and we're going to get started. All right. You guys know that I'm a big BMX guy. I raced pro. I did all that. Yeah. And last night, nationwide, they did at theaters nationwide, Rad, the BMX movie.
Yeah.
And I kind of wondered, but it looks like it did really well. And people were pretty stoked. Then some people were not so stoked because these guys are old, man. They're not young BMXers anymore. And they had to run for the bathroom after as the credits were rolling. What they didn't know was they had some of the people jump on and do a live Zoom at the end while the credits were rolling. And I forgot to unplug my phone. Wow. And so so they had a really cool thing. And but it was cool. I wish I could have gone. It was I had something else going on that we'll talk about. But the movie.
Not everybody knows what that is. I feel like probably more Shift and Steer listeners do than some of the other podcasts.
You're probably right. We should. So I don't even know what year it was. It came out in the 80s.
1986.
86. Okay.
Yeah.
And Bart Connors, who was a Olympic gymnast, I believe, and I knew him really well back then. He was one of the stars. And I guess the best way to explain it to somebody who doesn't know, it's kind of like Karate Kid, but on BMX bikes, right?
It kind of is, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Like that kind of coming-of-age story with a little bit of adversity and, yeah.
You got the one bad guy, you get the bad guys, and you have the protagonist, and you have the rad hell track, and you know, the good looking girls and everything. But
Lori Loughlin.
Yes, Lori Loughlin.
Yeah.
And it was one of those movies that was so bad that when you look back at it, it's fun because it's bad. But but anyways, a lot of people went to it.
Oh my god.
If you look around on social media, you'll see a lot of the parties that were around it and stuff like that. Kind of fun, kind of cool. And Now it
must have done well enough that a few years later they did the skateboard version called Gleaming the Cube.
Right.
that one had Christian Slater in it.
Yeah. It was and, it had more budget
Slater,
as well.
Yeah, Christian Slater, Stephen Bauer. Like it had it was a little interesting, but I don't know if many people remember that one, Gleaming the Cube.
Yeah, that was I remember that. Yeah, that was I forgot all about
it. I actually remember that too.
All right.
I was like, what a cool term.
So enough about rad BMX, but everybody, you know, BMX guys are car guys, a lot of them. So going back, the reason I couldn't go to the showing here locally was because I was over at the Lions Automobilia Museum, and I don't know if I've asked you guys before. Have either of you been there to that museum yet?
Yes, we were there. I was there with you.
Okay, that's what and I thought.
Dave Merrick for like, it was, it was like the Iskandarian
the birthday
lottery thing. Yeah, yes. And okay. yeah, we were all there. We had a table there.
Yes, and Matt.
Well, you had cocktails, so even, Tammy was with us. Everybody was there.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody was there. So, well,
except
but Aaron. But Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron's yeah. bar.
Aaron was shoveling snow, I think, even though it was summer. The museum, just to let you guys know, is an incredible museum, a tribute to Lions Drag Strip. And it's grown even since you were there, Matt. They've added they just keep adding to it. And some of the paintings they have on the walls are so incredible, but it's everything that happened in Long Beach. They have one that's dedicated to the Grand Prix. They have the hydro races that used to be held in the bay there. And then they actually have a real recreation of the starting line of Lions Drag Strip. And they have the Christmas tree, they have the strip, they've got actual cars sitting on it. It's life size. And then painted on the wall are the bleachers. And if you look closely, there's some famous faces from back in the day painted on there. But anyways, we were there last night for a celebration of life for Roland Leong. Roland passed away recently, back in December, and they had a celebration of life, and I was invited to it. And, you know, those are always a mixed bag because it's sad, but it's great. And it's great because we're celebrating him. For those of you who don't know, Roland Leong was one of the innovators in drag racing. He teamed up with Prudhomme early on, and I learned some really interesting things last night. And why my association to them was more in present day was through my watch company sponsorship of Don Prudhomme's team back in the day, and Roland was, you know, still working with Don as a crew chief. But going earlier, my wife Charlotte, she handled the Hawaiian Punch funny cars promotions when she worked for Del Monte. Hawaiian Punch was her deal, and so we would go out to the races back in the 80s and hang out, and I didn't know him well. We weren't like, you know, buddies, but he was a great guy, always happy, always smiling. No matter what happened, he had a positive spin on it. And cussed like a sailor, which was great. But some of the interesting tidbits that I picked up on last night was, number one, was Prudhomme met Roland because the Greer Black Top Fuel car, which is one of the most beautiful Top Fuelers ever that Bruce Meyer has in his collection, the yellow one, that was taken to Hawaii to run a race. And Don was, of course, the driver. He said that's where he met Roland. And they became fast friends. And he said Roland took him around, introduced him to everybody, showed him the Hawaiian lifestyle and everything. And then when Roland decided, Roland was always a car guy and a drag racer. And he came to the mainland to get into drag racing. Okay. So apparently his parents were quite wealthy. So his mom flew over, sat down with NHRA and said, my son wants to do this. How can we make it successful? And she said the daughter of Roland said, she said they were great, got him a job with somebody, and he got right into it. And then what was interesting was when he started the Hawaiian Funny Car, which is another one of the Hawaiian Top Fuel Dragster, which if you Google that, it's a great looking car, and the Hawaiian toured, but his mom is the one who financed that. She's the one who put up the bucks and And his dad was not real happy because his dad was a Harvard graduate and wanted him to become a professional. And he dropped out of senior year of high school to go drag racing and never did finish high school, but became one of the top tuners, top team owners. And probably the single most interesting thing I found out about Roland that I never knew was his daughter came up and she said, one thing that people didn't know about my dad was he was from Hawaii. He was Hawaiian, but he never learned how to swim. And she goes, we would, and everybody's like, what? You know, she goes, we would go to like the hotel pools when he was like out there on the road. And she goes, he would never go past the 3 foot mark. You know, she goes, because he didn't know how to swim. And everybody was like, what? And it just seems like if you're Hawaiian, you're, you know, living at the beach, right? But nope, he wasn't. So a great celebration. Guys like Ron Capps, Larry Dixon, Don Prudhomme, I can keep going. Dunn, I mean, so many drag racers there last night because the Winter Nationals are in Pomona this weekend. So it was perfect timing. And what a great location for it. Huge turnout. Saw Harry Hibbler, saw all kinds of people. And they had some great footage, great memories of Roland Leung. And the one thing that Don Prudhomme said was, he goes, he was one of his best friends in the world. And he said, he's going to miss him so much. And he said, but I got to tell you, he goes, he lived and breathed drag racing more than anybody he's ever met. He said, that's all he wanted to talk about. He goes, to the point where sometimes I was like, Roland, can we talk about something else? He goes, we're in our 70s and Roland's going, did you see that car running last week? I was watching it on TV and that guy should have put more tune into it, or he should have. And he goes, he would get into the minutiae of, you know, they were an ounce off on their, you know, nitro or whatever. And he goes, here he is. He's suffering from, you know, a disease where he couldn't eat any longer because he couldn't swallow. He was on a breathing machine and he was fielding calls from people with nostalgia dragsters that wanted him to come out and tune. And he goes, and Don said, I had to say to him, are you crazy? And he goes, I could do it. I could go out there and tell him what to do, you know? And he goes, it was phenomenal. So it was a great celebration. We've lost another one, guys. And you know, it makes you realize, you know, that life is fleeting. And, but they said that Roland told him that he wouldn't change a thing. He came over here and he was the luckiest guy in the world because he never had to work. All he was a drag racer. So that was kind of a nice night over there, and saw a bunch of people. Yeah, you guys remember the Hawaiian Punch funny car?
Oh yeah.
I remember the Hawaiian Top Fuel car, or the dragster car, but just back then they were smaller. There was not much car.
They were much smaller.
Yeah. It's just like you're sitting behind an engine and good luck. That's it.
You're sitting on the bell housing, right?
Yeah. I think you basically have the pumpkin between your legs.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It was crazy. You know? And then when they went to the rear engine, it was a little bit better, you know, but like, I remember when Charlotte and I had go out to Pomona in the 80s, and we were talking about this last night with someone about how everything's changed, including that. Like, now we go out and everybody has the big semis and the hospitality and everything like that. All the pro teams do. Even in the mid to late 80s, when we would go out there, that was not the case. They had a lot of the teams were still using Chaparral, you know, 40-foot long trailers towed behind a dually. A few of them did have semis, you know, like Kenny Bernstein and Hawaiian Punch and things like that. But you never really went back there that much because that's where they worked. They had, nowadays you sit on the stand side at Pomona and you look west. Those smaller stands on the west side, That was hospitality back then. And they had easy ups over the bleachers. And we would go out. One of them was Wine Punch. One of them was Budweiser. And it was so laid back because I can remember. And actually, I didn't remember this. Charlotte reminded me. She goes, if you were in the Hawaiian Punch tent, they would say, oh, if you want a beer, you can grab one out of the cooler next door at Budweiser. They give them away. And it was like, you could just walk over to their tent and grab one, you know, and if somebody wanted a Hawaiian Punch, they came over. And I think I've told you guys this before. We got to take a lot of people out there. And like, I took Bob Haro from Haro Bikes out there once. He'd never been to a drag race. And we went out there two or three times with him. But one time we were out there and Tommy Lee was out there with Heather Lackler. And they were in the Hawaiian Punch area with us. And they weren't with us. They were another guest. And Charlotte nudged me and she goes, look at that. Look at that. And I go, yeah, I saw him. She goes, no, look. And she pointed that Tommy and Heather were both sitting side by side on the same metal fold-up chair, and they fit. Yeah, because they were both such tiny people, you know? I mean, it was like, and she goes, they both fit on that chair together, you know? And just a funny side note, but good times. And it's great to hear the stories because it was so different back then. You know, they're talking about, you know, all the craziness on the road. And there were so many road stories and stories of, you know, just everything you can imagine. Yeah. You know, these guys were the balls to the wall stuntman of the age, you know, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. Very, very fortunate and lucky to have been, you know, around those guys and get to just hang around and hear the stories. It's really cool.
The Hawaiian Punch funny car was a cool looking car back in the day.
They were, man, with Punchy on them, with that little Punchy dude, you know, and everything. And
I was looking at the, you know, I don't think it was made by Hot Wheel, but I was looking at the little car because I thought I remembered having one. And when I pulled it up, I was like, yep, that's the one I remember having. I remember because it was I don't think they were metal. I don't remember if it was metal or plastic, but I remember I had the little Hot Wheel car.
You remember Punchy? You remember the ads? How about a nice Hawaiian Punch? And he'd go punch people.
That was Mike Anthony.
Well, did Mike Anthony get away with that today? If you went somewhere and you said, we're going to do an ad campaign where the little cartoon character goes, how about a nice Hawaiian Punch? And he punches you. They'd be like, oh, no, you can't do that. So, hey, I said, NHRA this weekend. What'd you say, Matt?
I don't remember those ads.
You don't? Oh,
really?
No,
I don't. Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
That was the whole
I'm sure thing. It's on YouTube. I'll go.
I was going to say, we'll have to look it up on YouTube. Yeah. But anybody going out to the races this weekend?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I can't make it.
I am thinking about it. I've got passes and everything, but damn it, it's supposed to rain. Supposed to rain on Saturday.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's supposed to rain
on Sunday.
I couldn't go Saturday if I went. I'd probably have to go Sunday. Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna make it though.
Yeah, I mean, I want to, but if it's gonna rain, I don't want to drive all the way to Pomona, deal with the crowds, deal with the parking, and then just get rained out. Then I'd end up sitting at the bar with Dave all day drinking. And that's not productive.
But I feel bad because already, you know, some of the teams, like people are already calling us out. I can't wait to see you guys. I know.
Puts that online, it's like calling.
Yeah,
out,
he's like hey, can't wait to see Brad. Can't wait to see Matt. Can't wait to see Dave. And I'm like, I don't know if we're going. Yeah,
I know. And well, when I saw Caps last night at Roland's deal, and he goes, are you coming out this weekend? I go, yeah, I'm going to try. And he goes, okay, all right, I got you all set up. I'm like, okay, great. And then I was driving home. Charlotte goes, you know, it's supposed to rain this weekend. I go, I know. I'm like, oh, crap.
I said yes.
I didn't reach out to anybody, so I don't have to be the guy that's like got all the tickets and the VIP passes and hospitality because everyone's so wonderful over there.
Oh, they are.
And then not show up. That's gonna be you, Brad.
Well, no, that's why I always try and show up, because what people don't understand, people always, I talk to people all the time and they go, oh yeah, I asked him for some passes for me and like five of my friends. And I go, you realize they got to pay for those, right? Well, no, they're just free passes. And he goes, no. NHRA doesn't just give them free passes. The teams or the driver has to pay for those passes. I had a couple conversations with Dixon and Caps and people over the years, you know, Prudhomme, that, you know, they don't realize that there's nothing free at NHRA. You know, it's like they've got to buy
it. It's like that at concerts now, too. You know, it's like the guest list thing is, you know, the artists pay for that. That's why there's no hospitality anymore in a lot of places. And, you know, and the meet and greet's a pretty healthy package if you purchase that as a fan or something. You know, it's the artists usually pay that stuff these days.
Well, sure. Yeah. It's because everybody, you know, well, let's look at, I mean, at one time you could get a good concert ticket for what, $20-$25. Now a good concert ticket's hundreds of dollars, if not, and depending on where you buy it, thousands of dollars.
Thousands.
You know.
What shows are you going to, Brad, where they're hundreds of dollars?
I'm sorry.
I'm
very fortunate. I haven't bought a concert ticket or a motocross ticket or a auto show ticket or anything for so long. I went to a Good Guys a couple of years ago, walked up. I go, I'm just going to, yeah, it was the last minute. And I drove down to Del Mar and I walked up and I went, it's how much? No, okay. You know, I was like, oh, crap. You know, I was like.
Wait, hold on. Group message, don't give Brad any more passes. Make him pay.
No, don't make Brad pay.
So. Brad only goes to front row at U2 at the Sphere now. So Brad only pays $7,000 for a ticket.
I was at the mixer board and then backstage. I don't go front row, man. What are you talking about? So, no, I mean, you know, the difference is appreciating it and understanding what they go through to do those things, because it's a whole nother, whether it's music or motocross or motorsports, it's a lot for people and they've got to work it into their whole budgets and everything. So you got to respect it and appreciate it. So no matter who
show
you
up. Are.
That being said, you should go to an NHRA race if you haven't gone. I know we've said that a million times, but if you haven't gone, you got to go once and you got to bring earmuffs.
So I mentioned I brought Bob Haro to his very first one, and we are right there at the starting line. You know, that the Hawaiian Punch area was usually just like you were a three-quarter shot to the tree, and so you were right at, they came off and you saw him right as there. And I said to Bob, I said, now you've never been to one of these, Bob. I said that it's gonna make your whole guts shake and everything. And he goes, okay. And he's just standing there, and I go, here's some earplugs. And he's like, yeah, okay. And the very first car took off, and his face, it was the funniest thing. He was, oh my God. He goes, I felt my gut shake, like you said. And he goes, where are those earplugs? And then about the third top fueler, it was, you know, one of those cars that pulled a line, and you just know something's going to go wrong. It's got fuel spewing out the exhaust, and it's kind of off a little bit. I go, this car is going to blow up. And he goes, what? I go, this car is going to blow up. And it got almost in front of us. Went, boom! And he goes, how did you know that? And I like,
Brad's so morbid. He's like, watch this guy explode.
Brad puts the big red button away.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to go a handful of times, and we run into you out there, and Dave and Charlotte and Tammy's been out there a few times with me. And now it's like, let's go to the grandstands for a few minutes and watch all the first timers. you see people, their eyes are,
I know,
like, what just happened? They're like, I don't understand.
Like, I mean, it's unlike
it's like watching the shuttle
racing where you literally, it's a visceral experience, not just the noise. You feel it, man. I mean, those top fuelers just,
back in the day, I was in ROTC and I did an on-the-job training program. It was almost like a summer camp, and I did explosive ordnance disposal and blew shit up.
Oh,
wow!
Some C4 and stuff. Yeah. And I still, since this day, have explained going to a drag racing event similar to that. It's not just the noise. You feel the cars go down the track. And when I was, when I blew stuff up, you get sort of this wave, this impact of like pressure, but it's a uniform pressure on the entire, like, let's say front of your body. So your eyes, your forehead, your chest, like everything has this wave of pressure. And you kind of get that when you're at a race, right? Cause this,
you do.
It's not just, so it's very similar to that. Like watching a Top Fuel funny car launch at the drag strip is like an explosion of C4 in front of you.
I'm sure they would say that too.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you're in the pits and they do their warm up, you know, and they start it up. And I mean, well, first of all, you want to be out of the way of the nitro, because that'll take your breath away and suck everything out of your lungs. But
it'll make you cry. You think chopping onions is bad.
Onions have nothing.
That happened to Charlotte the first race I ever took her to. I forgot to tell her to turn around, and she sucked it in. And she,
she's
going, she starts crying, tears start rolling because she couldn't catch her breath. And you know, it's kind of like, the best way to describe it is if you've ever fallen down like on your back and it just knocks the wind out of you and you can't catch your breath for a second. But it's burning at the same time.
It's burning, and you're crying. And you can't stop your eyes from watering. You're like, what's happening? Yeah. Why am I such a
That's
baby?
Why everybody's wearing respirators.
But if your sinuses are blocked, it's the best thing in the world, man, because that's not going to be anything. But she, if it even looks now like they're walking towards the car, she doesn't say a thing. She stands up, walks out, and, you know, walks out of hospitality and goes down the, you know, the aisle, because she goes, I'm not getting anywhere near that ever again.
And that's just firing it up and they're idling. As soon as they wrap the throttle, then.
Yeah, when they blip it.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah, and that's the other thing.
Nuts.
Sitting there on those stands and they blip the throttle and the thing jumps about 2 feet up in the air, you know?
It does. Now, and remember, at NHRA, every ticket is a pit pass ticket, basically. You get to go up on, you know, behind the little rope, but you get to go see all the pits, all the cars, and it's just a cool way of doing it.
So no, it's fun. It's really neat. It's great to take the family out, and because you get to see the races, and like you said, Matt, get to see the behind the scenes, and you know, it's the pro stocks are fun to watch. The only thing that's hard is that when the like super stocks come out after the you know, the Top Fuelers and the funny cars and the pro stockers, they look like they're in slow motion. It's like, come on, speed up.
They do. Actually, Ford's going to be out there with, I think, the Super Cobra Jet 1800, which is an EV version. They had a couple versions already, but now they've turned it up. I think the previous one was a 1300 and it ran high eights.
Yeah, which looks slow after those cars.
It would look slow, but that's fast.
Super fast.
So this one's going to be, I don't know, maybe it's going to dip down into the sevens.
But that'd EV. Be like and super stock territory.
It'll have noise. It just won't have that kind of noise. It'll just,
no, they've got the crowd, you know, you've seen the wave. They have the crowd go in a wave. So it sounds like the car's going.
Yeah. They should have it race one of the pro stock cars. So you can at least get a little sound there with it. But yeah, they're all out there with the,
and my question is, would it even do a burnout? Do they even need it to do a burnout?
I think they do, because that's a tire issue.
Yeah, it's a tire
issue. They got to heat up the tire.
Yeah, so they can do it. It's got it. Where the math gets funny is like, what about the torque? How much torque, right?
Yeah. You want it, but I'm wondering if the computer just brings it on at such an amount that it, I don't know.
Weird. Yeah, there's definitely some kind of crazy electronics going on.
So basically, there's got to be a curve. Yeah, is it's going to look like it's a 1-to-1 full size slot car.
It'll yes.
Well, when you approach that pit, when you approach that pit, they're not wearing respirators. You know that? No, they're wearing big giant rubber gloves.
Yeah. They all have tails that are grounding straps.
Yeah, and they're holding two big electrodes.
Do you think it just sucks a whole battery on one pass?
I bet you it uses a good part of it, man.
Because, you know, we talk about EVs and that we want to get performance out of it, but it's all about range. If range was not an issue at all, if you said you could put
11,
right, you're like, you can put the biggest battery you can fit in there and use all of that power as much as you can extract from that battery that quickly, you know, that much like discharge, if you will. How much power can you make?
Yes. Cooling is a big issue with that because they get so hot that they have to cool them in a very quick way. You know, I would think the cooling circulation systems on those are massive.
I mean,
and what they need to do is have a cable, a high voltage cable, strung the length of the track. There's no battery in the car.
It has to be plugged
just
in.
Just a tail that goes up to it, and
yeah,
you need even more power, and they don't have the weight of the battery.
All right, so the Super Cobra Jet 1400 ran 812.
Wow, that's crazy.
At 171, almost 172 miles an hour. So an 8.1, basically, it ran. So, and the new one is the 1800. And honestly, you would want to go up on this car and ask those questions, like, how are you doing it? How does it discharge so quickly? What sort of cooling? What sort of burnout do you do? How do you handle, you know, traction? You know, like, I'm just curious on how it would go, and it would be fun to see.
Yeah, it would. It's I wonder where they'll have it out there. If I go out, if they'll have it over at the Ford, if they have a pit, or if they have it at the Ford display. So,
yeah, I don't know. And that's the other thing is like, there's no teardown of the engine.
I know, that's what I mean. They don't have to rebuild it.
Do they just run it and then bring it back and charge it again? They don't even do anything with it?
I know.
Yeah, they must.
You know, because also it's exhibition, right? There's no teardown. They're not racing anything.
Right.
This is just for fun, just to kind of show what they're doing. So I don't know.
There's a lot of questions to be answered there. So
there's a lot of electric cars drag racing. I pulled that up and I'm like going down the rabbit hole. There's some interesting stuff. Well, are they all exhibition cars, I guess, right?
I mean, I think so, but that's the thing about drag racing is drag racing has always had a little bit of like show and go type things. You know, I mean, back in the day, they used to do the big burnouts and stuff just for fun. But now that's too expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I don't remember. This had to be about, I'm going to say maybe 2006. No, it couldn't have been that early. I don't know. I'm not even going to speculate. Sometime in the 2000s, there was a deal that Big Daddy Don Garlitz and Lucas were doing. And this is like a commemorative coin. And it was his Quest for 200 in an electric powered dragster.
Well, I'm looking at the article from March 2022. It says at age 90, Big Daddy Don Garlitz still plugged into electric dragster.
They were trying to do 200. And now you're saying that Mustang's doing one. And this was going to be a top fuel, you know, like a top fuel dragster doing it, which is no weight. And, you know, so it just shows the technology. Yeah, they had these coins. They sold them for $50 a piece to help fund their program. And it was, you know, kind of a neat little thing. But it just shows now you got a Mustang that's out there almost hitting that and probably will, you know, maybe with the, because you said this one's got way more power, probably do it this weekend.
It's 1800 horsepower. I don't know what the torque comes in at, but they're going for a record. They're going for the fastest electric car 0 to 60 and the fastest two-wheel drive electric car 0 to 60. And then I don't know what other kind of records they're going to go for, but I think if they're the only one out there with this much development into their car, then I'm sure they're going to set a bunch of records. Yeah. I don't know what kind of torque it makes. I'm not even sure how you measure that.
I know it's crazy.
Cause I'm not sure there's a dyno like enough to, I mean, I don't know what the limitation is, a few thousand horsepower, I think on a dyno. Right.
They
all the funny cars and top fuel cars, That's all the horsepower numbers they throw out, 10,000 horsepower. It's just based on calculations.
It's
dyno.
Computer calculations. Yeah, yeah. It's based on this and that. Yeah. I mean, you know, they always say it has the a top fuel dragster has the same thrust as the, as the space shuttle.
That's yeah. why I said earlier, it's like a, watching a bunch of space shuttles take off.
Yeah. Yeah. But they hit more G's when they lose the, when they pop the chute out.
When they pop the chute. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
At launch.
Reverse. Man.
You talk about records and stuff. Mike Dunn brought up, he was talking about records and NHRA records last night. And he goes, but sometimes the records get a little strange. He goes, I'm a record holder in NHRA. And he goes, I'll just share my record with you. And I can't remember the exact, but it was like, I had the single fastest pass at a particular track in this one year on 30% nitromethane. He goes, it got down to so much that it was like, well, yeah, but what color shirt was I wearing? Was like.
Well, I mean, we talk about that at some of the auctions, the muscle cars you pop up like Barrett Jackson. You're like, this is the only car with this rear end gear ratio with the four speed and the white ball shifter and painted in black with red interior. And it was like, okay,
that was
I get it.
Built on a Thursday.
Yeah.
You know,
like they're really go into the build sheet there and try to figure out the sort of the nitpicking the little
right so that you have rarity out of the car. Hey, have you guys seen the trailers for the new Mad Max film?
Yes,
Furiosa.
Yeah, Furiosa.
Yes. It's a prequel.
Right.
Right. And, right.
I just watched the second one right before we went on, and did you see these motorcycle chariots that they've got?
Yeah. I didn't see them yet.
Oh my God. They've got, the guys are in chariots, but they've got like motorcycles instead of horses. And always,
I think that they had those in Fury Road too. Didn't they?
These are like really crazy though. They're like over the top. And it's always fun to see what they create for these movies. The other one that stuck out that I saw in the trailer was, they had a 32 five-window Ford dune buggy, and it looked pretty cool. It was just a quick shot of it. I didn't get to see much, but it looked like they executed it quite well. The film comes out on May 22nd, but you know what's really sad is that in the thing that I read about the film is that the original Mad Max was 44 years ago. Yeah. 44 years ago. I remember seeing it on my like seventh birthday. And, my mom took me, and it was pretty cool.
Sure.
Yep.
Brad's lied. He drove to the theater. the chariot you're talking about, I think, is Chris Hemsworth. He's the bad guy. And he's got like three motorcycles, like, you know, and he's standing there like a chariot. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
they built some wacky stuff, some cool stuff for that, for those.
Yeah.
They really go over the top for that stuff.
The only thing that I do regret is like you see some of the scenes, the quick cuts and like that, and you see they're so AI generated. They're so, you know, and it was so cool in the original one because they had to really wreck cars. They had to really, they really filmed them out in the Australian outback and everything.
Everything was all sped up.
I think there's a lot of that in the film, but there's some limitations for sure.
Well, sure.
There's
budgetary limitations, you know?
Yeah. But just safety issues alone, like you could build a lot of these vehicles.
On, safety schmate.
And, but yeah, so what I've been told, is you can't kill actors.
Stuntmen, though.
Yeah, stuntmen.
They're expendable.
That's what they get paid for, isn't it? You know, Perry told me he gets paid to get injured.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's had his fair share of injuries.
Oh yeah, Waterworld. The best story Perry ever told me was when
he's
was
a stuntman, friend of Brad's, by the way.
Yes,
you guys, if you haven't listened to the podcast,
his dad, Perry's father was John Wayne's stunt double, and Perry was, help me here, guys, Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner's stunt double. And in Waterworld, where Kevin's going up the cargo net at that exploding city and the big fights mm-hmm. going on. Perry said that, you know, he had to do that several times. And he said, I crawl up the cargo net and the guy's supposed to kick me in the face and I fall back onto the dock. And he goes, the first time he kicked me, he didn't do it right. And he actually hit me in the face. He goes right between the eyes and he goes right above my nose. So he didn't break my nose, thank goodness. He goes, and I fell down to the deck. And he goes, and, you know, they were all wearing those steel-toed motorcycle boots, you know. I was on the deck, and he goes, the producer came over, and the director came over, and they're, Perry, you all right? You all right? And he goes, yeah, I'm good, I'm good. And they go, can you do it again? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, I go up the cargo net, and he goes, God damn it, if the guy didn't do it again, he kicked me a second time. And he goes, so I'm laying there and they're going, no, we want to have you checked out. We want to have you checked out. He goes, listen, I can do it one more time. Tell the guy just to stand over a little bit more and be careful because that net's waving. And he said that was the problem. Then everything's floating, so it's moving. And he goes, the guy was trying to do it, but, you know, he waves one way. He goes to correct and boom, connect.
Yeah.
And he goes, I look up at it. He goes, I can do it one more time. And they go, what do you mean? And he goes, I can do it a third time. And they go, Perry, this will be the sixth take. He was so out of it. He didn't know he'd done it repeatedly.
Oh my gosh.
And fallen all those times. And they went, I think we got it. He goes, no, I can do it one more time. And he goes, they did it one more time. Yeah. And they said, no, Perry, you haven't done it twice. You've done it six times already. He was like, oh. And that was the life of a stuntman, you know? I
mean, yeah. Now there's a medic involved.
Yes. Yeah. Those were the
Or back then they probably like, all right, he's out. Let's get another Perry in here. Let's keep moving. Yeah. Keep moving.
I mean, think back when his dad was like John Wayne's stunt double, you know, I mean, you got to fall off that stagecoach. Okay. And, you know, well, can you clear some of those big rocks on the dirt road? Nah, it'll look more realistic. Bounce off of
what John Wayne had to adopt the limp because of his stuntman.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. That's probably true. And you're right. Like back when they were just doing this all in real time, you know, instead of the CGI stuff, they're like, oh, you know, you're going to hit a rock. It's going to be foam and you're going to be fine. It's like now they could just add it in later.
Right.
Like you fall onto a beanbag that's painted green, right? And then they can move the beanbag out later. I saw
your monster clip. Is a tennis ball.
Yeah, there was some clip from a TV show, and the actor was like spinning around on something that was like out of control. He was on like a, I don't know, some kind of little motorized device spinning around out of control, and then he supposed to shoot off and like crash into like a big fountain or something.
Yeah.
And the way they filmed it was interesting is there was like a green, you know, a big green padded pole. The actor was on something and he spun around three times and then went off screen. And then the stuntman came flying in on this other thing and hit the pole, and it was filmed all in one shot. And then when it was done, they just CGI'd out the whole green thing and they put like a fountain there and the guy went flying through the air. And I was like, so there's still definitely the stuntman's involved. You know?
Oh yeah. You look at some of those and you kind of think, wow, to be an actor now, because like, you know, it used to be, hey, we're going over to, you know, we're going to be in France for 3 months. You're going to be, and now it's going to be, you're going to be in Warehouse 42 for 3 months on green screen. You know, I mean, it's
but like, listen, some films still do a lot, like,
well, sure.
Like John Wick. I spoke to Tanner Faust, who is basically Keanu Reeves driving double.
Yeah.
And that scene that made it into the trailer where that was Tanner. Tanner went up to the director and goes, wouldn't it be cool if I drove and picked up the gun in the street? The door was removed from the car. And he's like, you could do it. He's like, let's try it. And he tried it like a bunch of times, but then he had to go teach Keanu to do it. That was the thing. Keanu wanted to do a lot of the driving, do a lot of the stunts. And he taught him how to do it. They did it again and again. Tanner was like, I felt so bad for Keanu. He's like, he's such a good guy. He loves those movies so much. Every day on set, he would just show up again and he was just like, his knuckles are torn apart because of just so many fighting scenes, and he's just constantly bruised for months, just beat up, because they could put in so many different stuntmen like to fight him, but there's only really kind of one him if he wants to do as many of these scenes as possible. So, and he's like, how about you drive the car and then you reach down and grab the gun? And he's like, all right, if you think we can do it, let's do it.
It's such an interesting character he plays, because the reality of it is he's older now.
Yeah.
And he's not as fast. You know, he doesn't have those speedy reflexes. And watching those fight scenes, you feel that the performance is very sincere. It's kind of slow, and it's a little sloppy at times, and he seems pretty tired, and you wonder if that's just like the reality of it. You know?
In those films, it makes it great, so because cool. When you see him fighting, then he stops, and he's like taking a breath. I'm like, that's yeah. real. And I'm sure they put in other people. Right? In some scenes, there's people swapped in. And of course, all the CGI is, because every time you shoot somebody on film, it's like pop, pop, you hear nothing. But then when they add the sound and the blood and everything else, you add all of that after.
Wait a minute. That's not real.
They don't only with the stunt people. No, you could kill the stunt people.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you can shoot stunt people. Yeah.
It's like at Caesar's Palace, you know, Caesar lives there, right?
Yeah.
No, he used to.
The best part, that's the best part, when they walk in on what's the movie? Where they all go for the bachelor party in Vegas. And the one character goes, is Caesar here? And she's like, what? And he goes, well, he lives here, doesn't he?
The Hangover.
Yeah, the original Hangover. Such an awesome. I can watch that movie 100 times. I mean, no, absolutely, Matt. I mean, like Perry, you know, he's constantly busy, still either coordinating or doing stunts himself. And
by the way, still
plenty of that.
One of Perry's, I think, most notable roles as a stuntman was Terminator on the motorcycle. He did a lot of the motorcycle stuff.
Yeah.
And Terminator 2, the second one.
I don't remember which one. Yeah,
with the kid and the
But yeah, no, he's done tons of stuff. He's such a cool guy, and you know, I've told you guys before that I had asked him one time to light me on fire. You know, I said I want to do a fire stunt, and he goes, "Why?" And I said, "Dude, I said how many people in the world can ever say they've been lit on fire?" I said, "What a great conversation at parties and stuff." I was lit on, and I had him talked into it. And every time I'd see him leading up to it, he was like, "Okay, but you listen to me. You don't, you know, nothing else. You don't, you know, it's, you don't use instincts. You only listen to me, blah, blah, blah." And he goes, and he was going to do the gel and the whole thing. And he had already cleared it. And then he goes, "I got bad news." I go, "What's that?" He goes, "I'm moving to Texas." And that's when he moved to Texas. I never got to do it. And I was like, damn it. He asked me 100 times, "Are you sure you really want to do that?" He goes, "I do it for a living, but do you really?" I go, "Yeah." I said, "I really do." And he goes, "Cause it gets hot, man." He goes, "It feels like the worst sunburn you've ever had." You know? And I'm like, "Okay, you know," and I just thought it'd be the coolest thing in the world, and I trusted him because he's.
I don't think it's the coolest thing in the world.
No,
it's interesting for sure.
Not unless you got a photo.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got to get a few cameras rolling on this. What was the plan? He was just going to put you out, or you were going to like run across the lawn into a pool?
I wanted to do a thing where, you know, like you see, light you on fire, run, whatever, you know, 100 feet or whatever, and then you fall down and they put you out. You know, but we're going to video it, you know, and I was going to do it for Man Seeks Adventure and use it for that, you know, for my other podcast. And we never got to do it.
Well, sorry for all the noises. Pesto's been on my lap for a while.
No, we heard it. Was your upset stomach from your Euro yesterday.
We wrap up, let me just hit this little bit of news that came out. I don't want to say the EPA is backtracking a little bit on their very aggressive CAFE standards, like emissions rules, but there's been some adjustments. They've been talking with the car companies, and the car companies are going, listen, EV sales are slowing, and we're a little concerned by our 2029 deadline of meeting these certain standards. And so long story short is that's being pushed out to 2032, and there's going to be some
that's some not that far away.
It yeah, some adjustments away, to the rules. It's and it's only going to affect new cars that are built between 27 and 32. Between 2027 and 2032.
Oh, 2020, not 1927, 1932.
Not 1927, 1932. Yeah, so there's a lot more to it, but it's just kind of, and I know everyone's kind of looking at it as a win. The EPA is like, we're getting what we want, but we're just extending the date a little bit. And the car companies are going, yeah, okay. Maybe we can actually sell some cars and get people more accustomed to some of these things. We're going to need more time. And it's not all strictly EV, like, because this is separate from the rules of like California going no new cars after 2035 can be sold that are not EV, which doesn't make sense. That rule is going to have to change because we will have, and we already have other things, you know, not just EV. There's hybrids, and we're probably going to see some more hydrogen and stuff like that. So anyway, little change there, little change.
I saw a post on Instagram when you start talking about 2030 and like that. And these, I don't know who comes up with these, but you see them every once in a while. And it said, just to let you know that 2040 is closer than 2014.
Yeah.
And those kind of posts, you go, wait, what? You know, it's like, that's craziness. I mean, when we talk about the 80s, that's like when we were in, you know, like maybe a junior high and people were talking about the 50s.
Well, what's this wee shit?
You too. Come on. You're Mr. 80s car man, the best decade ever. And Aaron knows it. Aaron was in boarding school.
Yeah.
You guys sorry, always play like you're so much so younger than me. Today. You're not that much younger than me.
Yeah, you're closer to 40 than 14.
What's that?
Yeah, closer to 40 than 14.
Yeah, well,
you're
yeah,
closer to 15 than 40. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't even want to get into that. Let's wrap it up.
I think we're done.
So, Matt. I'm yes. thinking of something. Do you know what I'm thinking of?
You're thinking of the Shift and Steer website at shiftandsteer.com. Oh my God,
that is so amazing.
Oh, I was thinking of cotton candy.
I have a Neuralink in. That's how that worked.
Yes, Neuralink in.
And Shift and Steer, how about you? Where can they find you? At boxbodymatt.com?
Or just go to
Foxy Matt.
At Motor you should Radar own
Foxy
Media.
Matt.
FoxyMatt.com.
I could do that.
you should do Foxy Matt and just show Foxbody Mustangs. That's it. That's your new Instagram, Foxy Matt.
You could be ha 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 Aaron.
Right now it's dog on lap Aaron. Jeez. Dog on lap.
Yeah.
So, my gosh.
So find Aaron at fill in blank.
Oh. Anywhere, Aaron Hagar, I'm easy.
Easy. And of course, you can find me at Bradley_Fanshaw on Instagram. Go there, check it out. And you know what? We'll be back next week. That's a promise, not a threat. And thanks for listening to Shift and Steer.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.